Welcome to Therapist's Invitation. We are so glad that you are here with us. There has been a little bit of a gap between recording the last episode and this one. So Dr. Mayfield and I are diving right in, settling in. It is a smoky day in Colorado. Oh,
my goodness. Yeah. You can hear it in our voices. You know, my voice is probably about 3 octaves lower, and so is yours. Yep. We have all the smoke from the California and Washington Oregon fires settled in our valley. So it's weird that I live, what, 2 miles from, a mile and a half from the mountains, and I can't even see them from my house right now.
Yeah. And depending on when this is released, there's some pretty significant news that we would be remiss not to start the episode with. Dr. Mayfield's newest book, The Path Out of Loneliness, is available at least to pre-order, if not to order today.
Right. Get it on Prime.
You can get it Amazon.
Barnes & Noble, anywhere.
I mean, really anywhere. Sold, yeah. Big time, real deal, big book. Got my copy today. Super excited to read it because I can't read things virtually. I have to read them physically.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's some classes that I've taught at the university, you know, they have only online books. And I'm like, I can't do it.
No, not at all. My comprehension just goes through the floor on any of that. So it's hard, but I'm super excited to read it. I hope that our listeners are too. I think there's so much valuable information that you may or may not know. And even if you know it, even if you feel like you know it, I can guarantee you that you're going to read this book and rethink it.
Well, that's the hope, I think, has always been just to challenge our thinking on the mind-body-spirit integration. Mm-hmm. And we can't silo those three things. And so this book really takes a look at the integration of those three things really intentionally. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
See what happens. You know, I mean, if you like it, you know, drop a review on any of the major sites and, you know, give me some feedback. Shoot me an email.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it. I want to talk too, because there's an element of this book that is for literally anybody who's part of the human experience. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of elements of it that are faith-based.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. And we've had plenty of discussions, even just on this podcast, about the integration of faith and work.
Right.
That's, you know, our plan today is to talk about that a little bit more too. And like I said, we've talked about this before, but I wonder, at least from your perspective, why talk about it again? Is it because we just didn't do a good enough job last time?
No, I think we did a good job last time. We talked with Andrew Arndt, and it was a fantastic episode. So if you want to go back and look at Candid Conversations with Dr. Mayfield, I'm not sure what episode it is, but it was a good conversation with a faith leader here in town, a friend. And he did a fantastic job, conversing around that. I think, I don't know. I think this comes out of my yearly reading of Man's Search for Meaning. I read it every July. Just finished it. If you haven't read that, you know, I would encourage you to read that. Viktor Frankl, amazing survivor of Auschwitz concentration camp. He was a psychiatrist at the time, you know, that he got in, was taken into the concentration camp. But just his philosophy that we cannot separate out the parts of us, right? And I think that is something that I am seeing more and more. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to get your take on this too, of as a society, you know, we have separated out our parts. Mm-hmm. When I say parts, I'm talking about, you know, my home self, my husband or wife self, my work self, my faith self, my spirituality. And I think we're really doing ourselves an injustice or a disservice to do that because how many people do you know? Maybe you're listening and you're this person that you chose a career field because you wanted to make money, or, you know, you chose not to go to college because you don't like school. And so you're in a trade job, but it's not what brings you joy.
Yeah.
Or you live for the weekends.
Right.
Right. I remember that as I was, you know, working in high school and college, or even in grad school, a Chick-fil-A job, or, you know, odds and ends, living for the weekends.
Yeah.
And like, I just take a step back and just go, that's not really a way to live. Mm-hmm. Like, and so even if you're working in a job that you don't enjoy fully, how do you display identity and purpose Because I think coming back to a spirituality or our faith, it's all about bigger than ourselves, outside of ourselves, doing something for a greater purpose, mm-hmm. doing something for a greater entity, whether you believe in God or, you know, what type of God you believe in. You know, we believe in the God of the Bible.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we begin to lose ourselves, and I think our I was thinking about this yesterday, our purpose, our identity on this earth becomes very meaningless. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where loneliness comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just in my musings and my ponderings about this conversation and loneliness itself, realizing that, and again, I'll preface this. Longtime listeners know that I approach things from a very gestalt perspective, which is very parts-based, very, very here and now. Mm-hmm. And I think that the entire idea, which I find helpful, is that we are all made of parts, and those parts make up the whole. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's vastly unfair for us to separate out to a disconnected point.
Sure.
Because even when we're doing something like empty chair, where we're taking a part of you and imagining that part of you sitting across in the room, engaging in conversation as if it was separated from you, the intent is for us to understand the whole better, to understand the parts better.
You separate it out to get a better perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than, I think, what a lot of us do, couldn't tell you necessarily why off the top of my head, but what a lot of us do is we separate it out where this part of me doesn't get to have any interaction with these parts of me, and these parts of me don't get to have any interaction with this part of me. And so some of that might be political, you know, faith and state. And I think that when we apply that to government, there's a lot of good and a lot of confusion that can happen with that. But when we apply it to our personhood, it just gets us in trouble because I cannot separate out my spirit, my body, or my mind from each other because they are just entirely wrapped up in each other. And if my mind is not doing well, I can't actually expect my spirit or my body to do well. And if I'm separating them, then they're not doing well because they don't get to communicate. They don't get to be a part of things together. And so I think that's why it's important to have the conversation of what is the integration of faith and work, even in a place that doesn't feel like there should be any.
Well, and maybe we replace the word with faith and engage it in spirituality. Mm-hmm. But I think, especially in our society today, it's almost like we have a dualistic perspective that, you know, in certain ethic boards, certain conversations, we need to really engage our spiritual side. Mm-hmm. Spirituality is important, blah, 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 blah. But then when we bring it up in a work setting, now we're being discriminatory or being biased or being – now, obviously, I'm not saying that we need to impose our beliefs on other people, but just how we talk about it or engage it, I think – you know, so it becomes this dichotomous situation where it's like on one hand, it's really important. On the other hand, it's an HR matter. Don't bring it up.
Yeah.
And so like how do we do that in a way that is genuine to who we are? You know, I think statistically we know that people that have a spiritual foundation of any kind, longer life, healthier, lower stress levels, better heart rate, better brain wave functioning, all these types of things. And yet it's still something that as a society we largely move past.
Yeah. And I think it comes back to this conversation that we've touched on here and there and had more direct conversations on of authenticity.
Sure.
Like, can I genuinely believe about myself in a spiritual way and not have that impact the way I live my life?
Well, I think authenticity is a big piece, but I wonder in that too, how do we be authentic and congruent?
Absolutely. I think I stole this from Andrew in our last conversation about the integration of faith and work, but obviously from a very Judeo-Christian perspective, The role of a Christian carpenter is not to make Christian chairs or to make pews for a church.
Right.
The role of a Christian carpenter is to make really excellent chairs.
But he's doing it for a higher...
Yeah.
Like there's a broader purpose.
Yeah. It's not that, you know, if I have this faith orientation that I need to go into ministry or I need to tell everybody about everything I believe theologically. In fact, I would say most of the time that's very much tertiary.
Sure.
And the best way for me to operate is by example and by allowing that understanding of spirituality to inform the way that I work, not what I'm doing
right
in work.
Well, and that's where I think, and if, you know, for our listeners, look up Fowler's Stages of Faith.
Yep.
But I think a lot of times we get stuck in that theological discussion. I have to be right.
Right.
I have to bring this up.
Yeah.
Because we're stuck in a lower level of faith.
Yeah.
In the lower level stage of faith.
Yeah.
Versus that integrationist standpoint where, like you said, with the whole Christian carpenter, the goal is not to make a Christian chair. The goal is to make a good quality chair. You know, I wonder why – I'm kind of going all over the place for a second. But I think what happens is when we come to a place where we're not integrated well, mind, body, and spirit.
Yes.
We lead a lot of times – I've met people like this that they lead with the spiritual piece. I don't know if you've seen this. But they lead with just, you know, in some ways, almost just a out in the open, in your face type of Christian, let's say.
Yeah.
I'll pick on Christians for a minute. But they got the cross hanging around their neck, you know, and they, everything they talk about has, you know, praise Jesus or, you know, don't, you know, and quote a scripture here or a passage there or bring it back to this. And it's almost like this insecurity that I have to lead with that because that's where my identity is.
Totally.
Versus the integrated piece of I'm comfortable in my own skin in any situation.
Yeah.
And I'm able to have and hold conversations that bring tension to it.
Yeah.
But don't, you know, does that make sense?
And so I think
we all know those people. And it's like, I mean, heck, I've had students even in the university I teach at CCU ask questions early on in their mm-hmm. program about, well, does anything in the counseling realm really go against your faith? And my answer always is no.
Right.
And they're like, but no.
Yeah.
Because I have a perspective of integration in the sense that who I am mm-hmm. embodies what it means to be a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And who I am and how I see the world around me is I don't have a profession. I live life,
mm-hmm.
you know. I want to bring clarity to the mental health conversation in any aspect, any form. Mm-hmm. That's why we have this podcast. That's why I wrote the book.
Yep.
That's why we're doing the trainings. That's why there's a collective. That's why, right? But it's not, if you were to meet me outside of here,
right,
it's the same me.
Well, and the hope would be, at least for me, and I think the same is true for you, that if we were to side by side compare ourselves objectively to someone who doesn't have our faith orientation or even a sense of spirituality.
Right.
My hope would be that the only difference we would be able to see at first is the quality of our work, the level of our professionalism, and our adherence to ethical standards.
Sure.
Because that is the moralistic part of our field.
And then if you dig deeper, I hope that anybody I talk with, anybody,
mm-hmm.
I mean, pick a situation,
mm-hmm.
pick a political side,
mm-hmm.
pick whatever, would feel seen, loved, mm-hmm. and valued by me,
mm-hmm.
whether or not I agree with them.
Absolutely.
And I think that's where the integration gets even deeper on the stages of faith level. Again, go look at Fowler, James Fowler, Stages of Faith. And this is, I think, and I'd hope that I'm kind of in the level four, level five stage
right.
of faith in that, I'm able to allow other options and ideas and opinions, but it's not going to shake me.
Yeah.
Where I think a lot of us as a society are level two, three.
Right. And if you're unfamiliar with Fowler's, stages of faith development, The first stage is our intuitive and projective faith, which is based a lot out of images and stories.
Yeah, like as a kid, telling stories.
Yeah, learning parables and all those things. And then stage two is a mythical or literal faith, which is very concrete.
Concrete, yeah.
Right, wrong, nothing in between.
No gray.
This is how it is.
No tension.
And then stage three is a synthetic or conventional faith, which is sort of a commitment to the church and leaders, engagement with the organization, engagement with community.
Yeah, without a whole lot of thought put into it.
Right.
It's kind of a lot of us get stuck.
Yeah. And if you think about it from if you have a background in Christian faith. There, we see a lot of this in the transition from high school to college, where they've been in that stage of development where it's not truly their faith, it's just their commitment to the church. Right. And then when they lose that connection, there's no faith.
Right.
And so the next one is the individual and reflective faith, which is the focus on your own, like, is this my faith? Is this right. my belief? Do I?
Who am I? Where am I? And this whole thing. Yep.
Totally. And then stage five, conjunctive faith, awareness of perspective. This is how I like to refer to it as the gray stage.
Right.
Like, okay, I may have very strong beliefs in my faith about abortion, and I may have very strong beliefs in my faith about our own autonomy and ability to make decisions on our body. How on earth do these fit together? That's the gray
right.
conversation. And then finally, universalizing faith, which is the transforming process, which at least to my understanding is more of the application side. A lot of what we're talking about really is, okay, I have all these ideas. I have all these understandings of my faith and what it means. What do I do with it?
What do I do with it? And am I okay to be challenged in it?
Totally.
And not – it doesn't wreck me or ruin me.
Right.
And I think, you know, the conversation we're having about this integration piece is stage 4 or 5,
mm-hmm.
where I think a lot of our society, and not just in the Judeo-Christian
realm,
but in faiths across the spectrum
– yeah.
are like, well, I should go to church.
Mm-hmm.
I should go to mosque. I should mm-hmm. go to synagogue. I should go to mm-hmm. temple. Why? Well, I just should. I've always done
right.
that. It's just tradition. Okay, great. Why?
Yeah.
I have no idea. And I think that is where we get either thrust into stage 4
mm-hmm.
or we go backwards.
And it's really easy in that stage to operate in a I would say abrasive way when we integrate our faith into work.
Sure.
Because there isn't that room for subtlety or for allowance. I think that's a big part too is, you know, when we're in those lower stages of faith development, it can really feel like we're a hall monitor in the world and we need to tell everybody that they're doing it wrong.
Proving a point, or we're trying to make you know, be right, or we're trying to – who's got the biggest picket sign in the loudest voice? Like,
and I think it's important too to say, you know, I had a conversation with a client yesterday about this. There are lessons that we have to learn in each of those stages of development in order to progress.
Yes.
And it doesn't invalidate those lessons that we're learning. It doesn't even invalidate the actions that we take in learning those. It's just a matter of, are we learning them and are we attempting the best that we can to progress forward? And to do it in a way that is respectful of other people and looking towards something that is beyond ourselves, because that's the benefit of spirituality in a purely a spiritual counselor research position, is you have something beyond yourself that holds meaning for yourself.
Right. So, I mean, I totally agree with that. And this comes back to, I think, another conversation that I have with my students, but I think it applies to this conversation. Because they're all, you know, you think about your development as a counselor.
Yeah.
They're all freaking out right now because they're starting practicum.
Yep.
And practicum is kind of the beginning, the training wheels on for a counselor. And they're like, well, how do I know what theory to use and what techniques and all that kind of stuff? And I said, hold up. Last night in class, I said, hold up. I said, I don't want you to worry about theories at all right now.
Yeah.
I don't want you to worry about techniques at all right
yeah.
now. And they kind of got this look like, Dr. Mayfield, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what am I supposed to do then?
I said, so you need to answer these two questions. You've got practicum starting in 3 weeks. So answer these two questions. How do I view change?
Yep.
And how do I see the person?
Yep.
And I said, if you can answer those two questions, then foundationally, you are able to integrate whatever tool and technique you want to use.
Yeah.
So how do you see change and how do you see the person? And I said, you know, what I mean by how do you see the person is, do we have innate value as mm-hmm. human beings? And mm-hmm. if we do, we seek that out when we sit with clients. Mm-hmm. And then how do we see change? Is it a progression? I love the stages of change. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great framework. It's not always black and white, mm-hmm. but I think it's a great framework of how we progress mm-hmm. to autonomy, to choice, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. And I said, then it doesn't matter if you use EMDR or if you use, you know, Gestalt or if mm-hmm. you use existential, it's, you've got this foundation now. And I think I could see a collective breath.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing in this conversation around integration of faith and work yeah. is how do you see work?
Right.
How do you see faith? What are your definitions of those yeah. two? Because I think that's going to really inform how you engage this conversation. And we all, again, like I said, we all know those people that come in yeah. and their opinion or their right. faith or their idioms or yeah. their spiritual responses walk in the room before they do
yeah.
because they don't know who they are.
Well, and as an example from my own story, when I was in that stage and practicum and we were having those conversations, I was at a liberal university with a lot of individuals that believe very different things spiritually than I do.
Fantastic.
And we yeah. had to share our views of change and how we see the person. And I haven't thought about this for a while, so I might stumble over it. But my essential statement was that I believe every single human being on this planet has innate value and is wounded, and I have no ability to heal, but I can aid in the healing.
Yeah.
And 100% based out of my faith.
Right.
That's how I view it. And I think I said every single person is wounded and I have no ability to fix.
Right.
But I can aid in the healing.
Yeah.
And you know, wholeheartedly based out of my faith and my theology. And
but you don't lead with that.
But I don't lead with that. And even in that statement, it isn't overly evangelistic or
no.
or in your face, like, I believe that God's the one that's going to heal everybody. Like, I think yeah. that's part of it.
Sure.
But it's inferred rather, because that's not my – that doesn't apply in this moment necessarily. And what was really interesting too is that a lot of my peers with very different spiritual backgrounds heard that and they're like, yeah, I 100% believe that's true.
Right.
And like, great, yeah. Because well, I think that all truth leads to truth.
But this is where I think that – I'm going to pick on the church for a minute.
Yeah.
I think the Judeo-Christian church, the evangelical church, has done a disservice to its people
mm-hmm.
by really valuing the pastor or the missionary
yeah.
over the marketplace person.
Yeah.
And somehow you're not spiritual enough or not Christian enough
right.
if you're not suffering in Africa or in the streets of
right.
inner city homelessness or – and I remember as a kid going, there is no way that I could be a missionary.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. I like mm-mm. my creature comforts. and that sounds really, really vain and selfish. But that was just my thought as a teenager. Yeah.
And we've praised the we praised the huge and the big
right.
and the phenomenal – and do everything we can to avoid the subtle
right.
and the just kind of hidden.
But Mayfield Counseling is 6.5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. Okay, more towards 6 than 6.5, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think we're a month into 6.
Yeah, okay. Well, then we'll go with 6.
Yeah.
That sounded better. You know, it's like a kid going, oh, I'm 6 months and or 6 years in 1 month. But we don't know. We have no idea. We'll never know.
Mm-hmm.
The impact of the faithfulness.
Yeah.
Right? And that's, again, I don't necessarily care to
yeah.
know, but I think the vision that I have of this work-faith integration is
yeah.
that there is no separation.
Yeah.
And whatever we do it to the best of our ability,
yeah.
to the quality that we can do, to be an example of love and
yeah.
of peace and of kindness and mm-hmm. of hope and of joy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, those that are listening that have a faith, they know where we got that from, right?
Right.
1 Corinthians 13. But I didn't have to lead with 1 Corinthians 13.
No.
You know, the Bible says this. No, I'm going to lead with and love and
yeah.
non-judgment and kindness and faithfulness and self-control.
Yeah.
And And I think that can be done whether you're working at Home Depot.
Yeah.
At Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
As a COO, yeah. CEO, a counselor, a teacher, whatever.
Yeah.
That a gardener. I remember my grandmother and grandfather had a gardener that was just the kindest person ever. And they looked at, because they had a huge house property, and they looked at their job as the gardener to bring a smile and a joy to my grandparents' face. I never, I mean, that was, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I don't ever, I remember the guy. I remember the kindness.
Yeah.
You know, now in this almost 40-year-old body, I would have loved to go back and go, so tell me your story.
Yeah.
And there's probably just that, again, that there was purpose in and the blessing of. And so I think we probably caused more questions for our listeners today than we did answers. But I think this is the conversation that we need to have.
Yeah.
You know, because most things that we do are going to be engaging in interacting with others.
Yeah. And we can't separate these really important parts of us. And it also means that we have to be able to reflect on them and understand where we sit with them and be able to, because again, we have to go through some of these stages of development where we understand the concrete. This is what I believe is wrong. This is what I believe is right before we're able to understand any gray. Because in this way, gray is not its own color. It's a mix of black and white. And we need to be able to tell that what is white in its true form and what is black in its true form. And I think that a lot of the times it is a process of growing. And as part of that process, I'll make an absolute statement here and see if I come back and need to revise it someday. But I've held on to this one for a while. I think that if you go to a counselor and you ask about spirituality, the response should be, I believe that spirituality is important and I will engage those conversations with my clients as they desire, because my goal is to offer support to the client where they are.
Yep.
And if you're asking about my own sense of spirituality, that's something that does inform the quality of my work and the motivation for why I chose this field. But I am not going to engage my theology, even if we feel like we have similar faith systems.
Right.
My theology is different than yours, and it doesn't matter, because what matters is you and where you are.
100%. Well, if you have questions, comments, disagreements, please email us.
Yeah.
What's the email again?
Candid@mayfieldcounseling.com.
It's been a while. I forgot.
Yeah. It's all good. Yeah. And if you are looking for somebody to journey alongside you on this path of development, or even to explore the questions of this integration, we have some amazing therapists that can have these exact conversations with you and would love to do that as well.
Yep. See you next time.
Go check out Dr. Mayfield's book.
Please.